Hello, and welcome to the Sea Control Podcast. I'm Nathan Miller. Today, Jared Samuelson speaks with Tom Crestedina about his children's book, Working Boats. In addition to the masterful illustrations he created, Crestedina includes a little something for everyone to learn about these fascinating machines. Joshua Groover edited and produced today's episode. SimSec is looking for a volunteer to join our technical team and support our web operations. We're looking for someone with a background in WordPress implementation and support, as well as knowledge in web hosting and networking. Some knowledge of identity management and security operations is also helpful. Please reach out to content@simsec.org to share your background and discuss. I would like to pause here to highlight our local chapters. Whether you are in South Korea, Egypt, Singapore, France, New York, India, or the Caribbean, chances are there's a SimSec local chapter near you. You can find a full listing of local chapters and contact information on our website at simsec.org. So if you are interested, please reach out. Finally, I want to take the opportunity to recommend our partners in the SimSec podcast network, the Bilge Pumps. You can find Alex, Jamie, Drack, and a pile of Iron Brew bottles wherever you download your podcasts. And with that, Kimber's Men.
You're listening to Sea Control, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security.
Aloha, shipmates, and welcome back aboard Sea Control. My guest today is author and artist Tom Crestedina, and we're going to be discussing his children's book, Working Boats, an inside look at 10 amazing watercraft. You can find it on the SimSec holiday reading list, so I'd put in a plug for you there. If you have little ones, it's a great book for them. But as a reminder to listeners, all opinions today are our own and not reflective of any institution with which we might be otherwise associated. So, Tom, welcome to you. I don't think most of our listeners realize, but you're author, illustrator, as well as a mariner. You grew up in the Midwest. So where did you grow up, and what made you want to decide to pursue a life at sea?
Yeah, good morning. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, outside of Chicago in the north suburbs. And that I originally came out to the West Coast in 1994 when I was in my 20s. And I loved the natural environment here, the mountains and the water. And so that was kind of what drew me. But I had no experience with boats at all until I started working in a boatyard in Seattle. And started painting boat bottoms and worked from there to working in the yard store, and really just loved the trades. And it was the, in the beginning for me, I think it was the sights and the sounds and the smells of the boatyard, the sawdust and all those sounds of the grinders and all the action of the boatyard was just thrilling for me. And so I went from there to studying at the Seattle Maritime Academy. I completed my course, but I did not go to my graduation ceremony because during the month prior to that, we had a boat coming to the yard where I was still working that I just loved. It was a 1947 wooden seiner, and I met the crew and I got kind of shanghaied, and I ended up skipping my graduation ceremony and flying up to Sitka, Alaska, and I've never looked back. That was it. I've been fishing parts of the year ever since then. And I'm actually in the process right now of making moves to buy that very same vessel after running it as a hired captain. So we've kind of come full circle, and now it's called the Alsek, named after the Alsek River. She's a beauty.
Oh, very nice. Can I ask you a little more specific about where in the Chicago suburbs you happen to grow up? Because that was where my family's originally from.
Oh, really? Yeah, I grew up in the unincorporated area between Glenview and Niles, Illinois. So right, not very far from where there was the Glenview Naval Air Station, which is now I think it's condos now, but we used to see the airplanes flying out of there, hear them all the time, went to some air shows there. So that was actually the only contact I had as a kid with the Navy, although I later learned there was a big station in Waukegan.
Yeah, absolutely. My family grew up in Elgin, and nephew and grandson of some naval officers, so the pull of the sea away from the Midwest and like the flatness of it.
Right.
It's like, I can definitely appreciate the draw of the Pacific Northwest, but you mentioned you studied marine engineering at Seattle Maritime Academy. I don't know what that setup looks like up there, but I've been to the one at Cal Maritime out here in Vallejo, California, which is not that far away from where I live. And it's pretty impressive. What was it about fishing vessels that made you want to go to sea in those vessels as opposed to something larger? Because you have a lot of options once you graduate with that sort of marine engineering certificate.
Right. And I have never, ever used it. I took the, I completed the course. I was at the top of my class. I originally, when I got into, boats, my interest was principally is I had kind of the cruising dream that many people have. I thought, you know, someday I'm going to get a sailboat and I'm going to sail down to the Caribbean or sail to Hawaii and travel the world that way. And so I was fascinated with boats from that perspective. And the boatyard was mostly a pleasure boat yard. And I was not interested in fishing at all. It sounded like a lot of work. It sounded miserable and cold and hard. And I just met these people, the four guys, and the book is dedicated to them, that the four guys that took me to sea for the first time. And it was the people of the industry that made me stay, that really was the most fascinating, the best part of it is the people. And I think that's true in any profession, of course, but there's just a really special, it takes a special kind of person to go and take the risks that fishing involves, not just the, you know, there are physical risks, but there's also no guarantee that it's going to work out, that you're going to make any money or make a living. And it takes a lot of optimism and toughness and adventure, that kind of adventurous spirit. And that's the thing that really kept, you know, that's kept me in the industry to this day and that I still love so much is being around those people. And the great fortune that I have now is that because I've been making these drawings that are, that depict sea life of, and especially fishing life, not exclusively, but especially, that's allowed me to be in a place where fishermen and other mariners are coming to me all the time to tell me their stories and to ask me to help document what we do. And that is just an amazing blessing. It's just incredible. It's, I never thought I'd be here. It's really, really cool. But it's the people. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm going to have some follow-up questions on the documentation piece later on for you. But can you tell us that first, I don't know, my Navy brain is kicking in. I want to say deployment, but I don't know. That's the first time. Yeah, the first season that you went out, what was it like and what were your first impressions and what was it that, no pun intended, hooked you?
Yeah, I've actually never worked in a hook and line fishery. So I was working on the boat's a purse seiner and it fishes in Southeast Alaska, which is an amazing natural kind of place. So, but the first day I flew into Sitka, and if you've never been there, it's a stunner, that town. It's incredible. There's a beautiful volcano across it's like kind of ash cone volcano, like Mount Fuji. And Sitka Sound is full of all these little islands and some of them have houses on them. And I came in, there's huge tides there. The tide was kind of low. Flying in on the airplane, and I could see all this intertidal rocks, and I was just like, this place is incredible. It's beautiful. It was a sunny day, and we didn't have very many of those that season after that. But when then I joined the boat, and we went out to fish for chum salmon, I got kind of sick and didn't want to admit it. Then spent the day leaning on stuff when I wasn't working. The first time, I wasn't mentally or physically really ready to not understand how much work it was going to be in the beginning. I remember eating so much food for the first few days. And then since you're kind of there and I was committed to it, you know, after a couple of weeks, you know, I got acclimated and I realized I can do this, you know, and of course, I started out working on the deck. You know, we handle these nets that are a quarter of a mile long multiple times a day. And so it's a lot like work. And seining in Alaska also involves a lot of getting stung by jellyfish, which is, it's not an experience you can really convey to other people in words, particularly if you...
Do you want to take a shot?
Oh, it stings. And it's bad in your eyes. Like, so that is... And there's a certain... It's kind of like I coached baseball for my sons later, and I had to kind of explain to them, there's a certain amount of pain that goes into this, and it helps the people in the industry self-select for who wants to continue. The jellyfish is a it's a filtering process. It helps us keep the strong-willed.
Can you tell us a little bit more about sort of the typical workday on a purse signer too? Because I mean, I will just tell you about our listenership. It's a lot of academics. It's a lot of naval officers. I don't know how many actual people we have who are intimately familiar with the, sort of the day-to-day life of a commercial fisherman. Although we do talk about IUU fishing a lot, even though I don't think a lot of that's going on up near Alaska there. We're usually talking about South China Sea and, you know, okay, the Indian Ocean and those kind of things, right. But sort of what is, you've described the arduous nature of it, but what does that day entail?
It's very difficult to put like the experience of working on fishing boats into a single bucket and say, this is what it's like to be a fisherman, because every gear group, which is the kinds of equipment that we use to catch fish, they vary from, you know, long lines that a long liner would lay along the bottom with hooks on it, baited hooks. And those people who work in those are working very, very often monotonous, long seasons. But in our fishery, there are draggers that being trawlers that drag large nets that are cone shaped through the water. Our fishery is a net fishery that uses two boats to fish on the surface of the water in the upper zone of the water, so that the cork line of our net floats in the top. The two boats are, we call them the boat and the skiff, and they tow the net, and we fish along the beaches because along shorelines, because that's where the salmon swim. So each time we set our net, which is about a quarter of a mile long, we tow it for about 20 minutes, and then it takes about 20 minutes to get it back. And if you're on a strong operation, you'll do this about 20 times a day. So you get up. Our fishery is a derby fishery, meaning that we're limited by time, not by specific poundage. In terms of conserving the resource, we're disallowed from fishing for most of the time, and they'll have an opening that will allow us to fish for a certain period. Sometimes that period is one day, and sometimes it's 2 days, and sometimes it's longer, and then they'll count the fish. So that's my little prelude. When an opener happens, a fishing opening, we'll usually get up at, they typically start at 5 a.m. So we'll get out, we'll anchor in the place where we're going to go. And then the skipper usually gets up and goes out to wait to make sure that nobody takes their spot very early in the morning, meaning, you know, 1 o'clock or earlier. Then the boat will jog there and the crew will roll out of bed at 4 and get everything ready the final preparations for the day. And then we'll work that day. And if it's a 1 day opening, it'll end at 8 o'clock. And during that time, we'll be trying to make as many sets as possible. So trying to be as efficient as possible. And the work itself is, you know, we're all in rain gear, and it's very hard to describe the details of how it works, which is one of the reasons that I've been drawing all this stuff for so long, is to help people who haven't experienced it visualize what's happening. So you'll work at a day that's the work is generally kind of wet and it rains a lot where we are. But there's also breaks while we tow. So you'll have a really intensive 20 minutes of work followed by sitting around and telling jokes for 20 minutes. And then, you know, the net comes back and then we gotta work hard for the next 20 minutes. And ideally you just keep that process going all day long. Then at night, after the fishery closes, we'll go to a tender, a transport boat that pumps our fish off using a kind of vacuum pump. They're really cool. The fish pumps there. They use an air vacuum and positive air pressure to pump these slugs of fish in the water out of your hold. So it's really a neat process because it doesn't damage the fish aren't physically moved by any kind of impeller or anything. So that keeps them from being bruised and beaten up. And it's something I really want to draw so that people can see it. And that's the theme of my life now, is that I do all these things that are so hard to describe, so I draw them. But the tender will take the fish back to town, but we'll usually have to wait for it. And on that day, you might get to bed, you know, if you're lucky, at midnight. And sometimes you hit the rack for an hour or two and wait. And sometimes you can't get unloaded until, you know, very early the next morning, and then we go back to town and get outfitted for the next one. When the season's really going well, then we'll have periods of 2 days to fish, followed by 2 day closures, and it will go in a cycle like that. So the openings will be 40 hours long instead of 15 hours long. And in a 40 hour opening, you have to expect that you're not going to sleep very much. We can fish when we have enough light. In Alaska in the summertime, that's really most of the time. It doesn't make sense for us. You can't catch fish in the dark. So once it gets dark, then we'll stop. So in June and July, which are the early part of the season for us, you know, if we have those 2 day openings, then you're really going to expect to work pretty much the 40 hours, followed by unloading and preceded by getting ready. So you'll work, what most people work in a week, 2 days. And then when you're done, you still have to go to town. So that process, it doesn't start out with those 2 day openings because the Department of Fish and Game that regulates us has to count the fish and determine whether or not it makes sense for us to continue. But it makes sense whether we're going to do any harm by working. So they want to make sure that there are fish in the rivers and the eggs are being laid before they give us that two on, two off schedule. So you start off with some easy ones, you know, 1 day things, and then you work it into as the salmon run builds and they start to really storm in, which is amazing when it happens really well. You know, we get in this routine where we're working a lot of time during the opening, and then during the closure, we go back to town, repair our nets, and get things fixed up because things break every day. And so that's kind of the routine, and rest a little bit and then go back at it.
How did you get into doing the illustration piece initially?
For years, I lived a kind of a beatnik lifestyle of going fishing and then going and traveling and seeing the world when I wasn't working and taking long trips abroad. And I traveled in Europe a bunch during the winters of 2001 through 2003. And so I traveled a lot in the West and I enjoyed that a lot. And then I went to Prague 1 year, and it was the first time that I encountered a language that I couldn't understand anything in almost. So that made me want to learn to speak a Slavic language. So this is kind of a long answer. So the following year, I went to Poland to try to learn to speak Polish. And I did not understand how complicated that was going to be, but I'm glad I did it because I met my wife there. I lived there for several years and I met her maybe the second or third year that I was there. And we had our first son in 2008. So that was, like every parent knows, it's just an incredible life-changing experience in my head, but it made things very complicated for me because I couldn't square the lifestyle of going back to fishing with being the parent that I wanted to be. So I stayed home for 2 years and did not, and worked in a translating business that we established. In 2011, there was a projected return that was really promising. It was huge. And there was also a really good price projected. And Anya, my wife and I, you know, we were starting to hear from friends from the industry, you know, what kind of an opportunity that was. And we made the decision that it would be a good idea for me to go and see what I could do for us by going back to fishing. And my son, Franjo, was 2. And so it was so hard to leave. They were going to be 10 time zones away. And I was going to be working with people that they weren't the same group that I'd been with for all those other years. So I didn't think there was really going to be any opportunity for them to come and visit. And I was going to be away for 3 months and it was tough. So we had a great season. It was really good. But, you know, I'd get these pangs of missing my son that were like physical pain. It was really difficult. So I've been drawing pictures all my life, you know, and kind of busking with them sometimes when I was traveling. And so I decided to kind of do what I knew how to do and send my son a drawing of the boat that I was on. And I really loved always the children's books of like Richard Scarry and David McCauley. They aren't necessarily just for kids, the McCauley ones for sure.
But the McCauley one is the one that I thought of as I was doing my prep. I was like, this book is like Castle, which is like probably the most popular David McCauley book. The one that I grew up reading the most here is
sort of this,
yeah,
I used to go to the library in our elementary school, you know, and read that and his pyramid book. That kind of language, visual language, the language of this kind of explanatory drawings was something I had not done before. And I didn't want, and I wasn't going to do something very technical for my 2-year-old. So I drew a cutaway drawing of the boat that I was on at the time. And then I was doing it, you know, we have limited space on the boat. So, you know, you go to town and you'd sit and sit in the bar or restaurant, and that would be a way to kind of give yourself some space, right? And that was where I worked. And other fishermen really responded to that. And after that time, I had people asking me to do something similar for them, for their kids, or just for themselves, or to explain to other people what they did. And that just started the ball rolling on the series of drawings that I made, which eventually led to the publishing company finding them in a coffee shop in Seattle and approaching me about making the book.
At what point did you decide to have a book here, and how did you choose which vessels and topics you wanted to pick for that?
The book idea, I wanted to make it, people had talked about, we had talked about making books, and the drawings were inspired by books to begin with, but I did not know what it takes to do it. So I thought about doing it myself. I now know a lot more about it. I always wanted to make a book, but I didn't have the resources or the skills. And I was very fortunate that an editor from Sasquatch Books, Christy Cox, who has been an amazing ally, came to this coffee shop in Seattle, saw my drawings on the wall, was there with a friend, and they started trying to figure out if they could fit them on the pages of a book. And then that's the owner for my contact information. And they offered me the opportunity to make the book. And I ended up working with an amazing team. And the process is a lot more arduous than I thought it would be. And like, there's a lot of exhaustive kind of editing and checking, and a big team of people has to work on this. So we came up with the table of contents, and that got kicked around a bunch of times. But I wanted to choose vessels that had a lot of strong visual interest, like the fireboat that I chose, to things that would be exciting to look at. I definitely wanted to show how these fishing methods work, so that people, whether they were kids or adults, could use the book as a tool to explain their trades. Because I've explained so many times to people how seining works, trying to use my hands and gesticulations. And you end up, there's a point where you start talking about the rings on the net, where you can see their eyes go blank and you've lost them, right? So the book is designed to do that. It's designed to help people explain their own lives to others. And so I try to, in that way, it kind of advocates for them, which I hope I'm doing well. And we wanted to choose a variety of things that showed that that there are many kinds of work that people do on the water. And in that way, hopefully, you know, plant that seed of inspiration for young people who might want to bring their talents to the water side of the world.
Well, then just one final question before we close out here. But we have an awful lot of sailors who listen to this, both in the, you know, civilian side as well as military side, from a lot of different nations. But do you do work on a commission here? Do you take commissions from folks?
I do sometimes. Yes, I do. But it's been really hard to find the time now. The great news with the book has been it was very successful, and it's sold out of its first printing run within just a few weeks, and really struck a chord with fishermen in a way that I hoped for, you know, couldn't count on, and was had my fingers crossed, you know. Now I'm working on a follow-up project, and I've been so busy for the last month, in a good way, for the last 3 months. It's made all the hard work that went into making the book worth it, because of the way it's connected with people, but it's also now taken up all of my time. So I don't have a lot of bandwidth. Can you still say that? I don't have a lot of free time or time to do projects that I would love to, even for my friends. So I try, but it's hard.
No problems at all. But I'm sorry, that's all that we have time for today. I'd like to thank my guest, Tom Cressadina, You'll find a link to Working Boats in our show notes. I'm assuming from what you said that there's probably going to be a second printing run of this, Tom. Is that?
Yeah, it just came back into stock 10 days ago.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling the listeners, like, strongest possible recommendation for all these books where I wind up talking to the authors, I get a review copy. And it's not very often that I reach out and buy an extra copy just for myself to have. Those review copies get handed off to the local Navy ROTC unit to go there to stock up their collection of maritime things. But this is one that I reached out, bought for myself. On the second printing run here, I will probably get some additional copies for all the little ones in my family. But if you have a small person in your life there between the ages of 3 and 7, this thing's phenomenal. If you have someone who's spent their life going to sea, they will appreciate it just as much as that 3 to 7 year old. So strongest possible recommendation. There was a reason we put it on the list. Tom, where can we find you online? You've already sort of mentioned what your next project is, but where can we find your work online?
My website is called The Scow, and it's at www.thescow.bigcartel.com. But if you Google boat cutaways, there's a pretty good chance you'll find something I've drawn now, and it'll lead you to me.
Now, we'll be sure that we put a link for that in the show notes as well, so anybody can find the stuff that you're looking for. It really is spectacular. Thanks again for joining us. To the listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Same.